everyone. Welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan. Because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason. And here we delve into those reasons. This week, I'm excited to share my interview with Jameson Ridenour, the creator of the Palimpsest podcast and also a college professor. Palimpsest is a single-voiced audio drama about memory, identity, and the things that haunt us. He tells me how he uses his PhD in gothic horror when teaching now, and why gothic horror is his favorite subgenre. I love talking to academics about horror because it is not a side of my brain that I can access so easily. I know you're going to love this discussion. And if you want to get more involved with the show and join the community over on Patreon, click the link in the show notes. And for only $3 a month, you'll get access to early episodes, stickers, a monthly newsletter, and more. As always, please take a second to rate and review us wherever you listen. And let's get into my conversation with Jameson Ridenour. Hey, Jameson, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here. Do you want to start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Jameson Ridenour, and I am the writer and producer of the horror audio drama Palimpsest. And I'm also a playwright. I write horror plays and some fiction. And I'm a professor, and I teach contemporary horror fiction and film pretty regularly.
That's awesome. I can't wait to talk about all of that. But first things first, what's your favorite scary movie?
Oh, I guess I should have seen that something like that would have come at me early on. I don't know, because there's so many different levels of scary and different, you know, subgenres within. So I'm going to pick three: Ginger Snaps, Black Christmas, and Let the Right One In.
Nice. Those are all very different, but they have a very similar aesthetic.
Yeah, so. They do. I kind of like that. Doesn't have to be slow burn, but I like atmospheric settings, and I like well-developed characters and relationships kind of at the heart of my horror.
Nice. Speaking of horror plays, did you get to see Let the Right One In on stage?
I did not. The images of it were stunning, but I didn't get to see it. Did you?
Yeah, I saw it when it was in Brooklyn. So it was really, really atmospheric and creepy.
I'm jealous. Yeah.
So how did you first fall in love with the horror genre?
I fell in love with horror at a young age. My parents divorced when I was 11, separated when I was 10. And my mother was a big fan of not full on horror, but like Rebecca, like gothic kind of things. And my siblings were younger than me. And during that kind of year where it was just mom at the house before she remarried, there was a double feature that played every night in Florence, South Carolina, which is where I'm from. And it was broadcast out of Charleston, South Carolina. And it had a horror host, Ashley Gastly, a guy dressed as a vampire. And they would do an episode of Darren McGavin's The Night Stalker. And they would follow that with either like a Hammer film or a Universal film or something like that. And so every Friday I got to sit up till like, you know, 1 a.m. to watch this. And it felt like a really cool grown-up thing to do. And I sort of fell in love with it at that point. And this was 81, 82. And I also was coming of age right as Stephen King hit his stride. And so I was reading Carrie and, or not Carrie, but Pet Sematary and Christine, things like that as they came out. And it was a pretty good time to be a horror fan.
Oh, yeah, that sounds really fun. Is Stephen King your favorite horror author?
Not really. He's kind of, I think, like a lot of people in the 80s, was a gateway drug. I'm a huge Shirley Jackson fan. I'm a huge Peter Straub fan. So that Stephen King type of 70s, 80s horror, I think Straub did it a little better. King's really good. And then I read pretty much anything that's out there right now. Stephen Graham Jones, Caitlin Kiernan, but yeah, probably Peter Straub, Shirley Jackson.
Yeah. Do you like Paul Tremblay?
Yeah, I like Paul Tremblay a lot. Tremblay zoomed into my horror fiction class a couple of semesters ago to talk about Head Full of Ghosts. He's a really great guy.
Oh, that's nice to hear. So why do you think that people who seem perfectly sane love the horror genre?
Stephen King would say it's what keeps us sane. You know, he says it's like a pressure valve release. I don't know if that's true, because I know a lot of people who don't like horror who aren't. But I don't know. I think there's a lot of darkness in the world, and you can't pretend like it's not there. Horror, there's a lot of horror has a lot of functions, I think, but one of the things it does really well is provide us a safe space to face some of those dark things and think about them and encounter them and either show them being defeated or at least engage with what they mean on a metaphorical level. And I think that's part of it. It's like not pretending that the world is all sunshine and rainbows because it's not.
I love that answer. That's great. So, what scares you today in horror movies and in real life?
I since I had kids, and my kids are older now, but I really have a hard time with stuff threatening children. And it, probably as a corollary to that, I've never been able to do home invasion movies. I can't, and I'm not really afraid of like somebody breaking into my house in my day-to-day life. That's not something I really think about. We live in a small town in North Carolina. It's a relatively safe place here, but home invasion movies, like The Strangers, I recognize why it's a good horror film. I once was enough, and I won't watch that again. So that scares me. In real life, I mean, I think the stuff that scares all of us, right? The watching the country fall apart in real time while the planet heats up. I mean, there's plenty to be afraid
Oh my God. Oh, I know. I feel you
Yeah.
there. Did you know that they're making a like a three movie reboot of The Strangers?
No, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
Like,
So,
cool. Well, good
yeah.
luck to them.
I rewatched it once for the first time during the pandemic. It was good, but like the main characters, they make such stupid decisions that you're like, you get what you deserve. Like you're going outside and leaving your front door open.
I mean, the scariest part about that is the impersonal nature of it. I mean, it's the, you know, and it gets cited a lot, the line where, you know, why did you do this? Because you were home. Just like that there's no reason, there's no way you can have avoided it. It's just a random targeting, which means everybody's vulnerable. And I don't like that.
Have you seen The Strangers 2 Pray at Night? It's very different. I would say watch it, especially because there's this one really cool scene in a pool, but it's not anything like the first one, really.
I
So.
can I can handle it. I mean, it's not like I curl up in a ball or anything. It's just more uncomfortable than I want to. One of the scariest recent films, recent being relative term, I think It Follows hits all of my buttons for what makes a good scary film. It's so paranoid. It's a very simple premise, and that movie scared the hell out of me. I loved it. So that's more my speed, I think.
Yeah, I was just talking about that with the last person that I interviewed, and he's like, "Yeah, that's terrifying. Like wherever you go, this thing is going to find you." So, I have to rewatch It Follows because I only saw it once in theaters when it came out, and I haven't rewatched it since because I was like, "I don't need to see that again." But
I'm teaching a horror film class this semester, like starting next week, and it's one of the films we're doing. So I've just rewatched it to get ready for it.
oh.
And it holds up. It's good.
Nice. So what else is on your syllabus for your course?
There's like 20 films. It's a ridiculous list because I couldn't. I had like 75 films, and it's a hybrid course. So I'm co-teaching with a filmmaker. So I'm going to be doing film analysis, and then they're going to lead the students through making short films, horror films. So that's kind of fun. But so I tried to hit like as wide a range as I could. So we've got classics like Psycho and Texas Chainsaw and Halloween and Black Christmas, and then we're also doing and Night of the Living Dead. And then we're doing X and Pearl and, you know, together. And we're doing It Follows, Babadook, Gingersnaps, Dog Soldiers, I think. I'm feeling werewolves right now. I can't remember what else. It's an extensive list
That's
I'm kind of
awesome.
looking forward to. Yeah. They're either going to love it or they're going to be so overwhelmed by the end of it that they can't move. Either way is fine with me.
Either way is good. What's your favorite subgenre in horror?
That varies. I like ghost stories a lot. When I'm writing, I tend to write ghost stories because I think there's so much you can do with it. There's so many metaphors going on there. My last play was called Bloodbath, and it was a slasher on stage. And to prepare for that, I watched like 50 slasher films in a 2 month period, from really great like artistic slasher films down to things like Sorority Babes in the Slime Bowl Bowl-O-Rama, which is absolutely what it sounds like. So I really like what can be done with this with a slasher. I think there's some kind of more sophisticated takes on it, like Stephen Graham Jones's My Heart Is a Chainsaw. It was a really good slasher novel from last year. So I guess that and werewolf films. There aren't nearly as many good werewolf films as there are, like, you know, there's so many vampire films. There's so many slasher films. There's so many, you know, psychotic murderer films. There's only a handful of really, really good werewolf films, and I appreciate them when I see them.
Nice. I have to admit, I have not seen Ginger Snaps, but it's been on my queue for like ever.
It's so good. Oh my God, it's so good. And the sequels aren't, the sequels are solid. Like they're not, I was not excited that there were sequels, but then they actually held, they're not as good as the first one, but they hold their own pretty good.
Good to know. You said you love ghost stories. Do you believe in ghosts?
Don't.
No?
No, I
Okay.
don't. I know that's a boring answer. My students are always disappointed when I say that, but I don't. I don't, I mean, I don't believe in anything beyond what we have here. I believe there's all kinds of things we don't understand yet, and there's all kinds of natural phenomena that we don't, we just, there's a lot we don't know. And I think ghosts sort of arose out of not understanding those things. And I've had weird shit happen to me that I can't explain, but I don't think it's ghosts.
Do you have any
So,
favorite horror directors?
older directors, I loved Robert Wise. He was so good. The Haunting, the 1963 Haunting is so good. Recently, I mean, it's sort of, I guess everybody says, I guess, you know, Ari Aster and Jordan Peele, but you know, damn, they're good. So I do like them. I like, I'm gonna forget his name, the guy that did Neil, he did The Descent, and he also did Dog Soldiers. I will pull up his name in a moment and tell you. He's a
Neil
British
Marshall.
filmmaker. Yeah, Neil
Yeah.
Marshall. Yeah, I really like his stuff.
Yeah, I got to see The Descent on big screen again last summer, so that was fun.
Yeah, that is fun. It's set, I mean, that was filmed in Scotland, but it's set in literally my backyard. Like it's set in the mountains of Western North Carolina,
Oh,
and
wow.
that's where I live. So that one's on my syllabus too. So it's a pretty, hits close to home.
Nice. Have you ever
Yeah.
gone spelunking in the caves?
I haven't. I've been in caves. I mean, I've been hiking. There are lots of different levels of caves in the mountains here. And so I've been in like things you could walk into, but I've never done the whole, I'm too claustrophobic. I don't know that I could handle it. I mean, the creatures are scary in that film, but the scariest stuff in that film is just them trying to get through little crevices and no thanks.
I'm not, I don't, I've never thought of myself as a claustrophobic person, but I feel like I would not do well down there.
It's not just the claustrophobia, it's the like, what if I can't get out?
Yeah.
You know, what if you can't, what if there's no way forward and there's no way back? Then that's not a good thought.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah. So you are the writer and producer of a podcast called
Palimpsest. Palimpsest.
Palimpsest,
Yep, that's correct.
with Haley Henninger, who
Yep.
performs it. It is an audio drama that is about memory, identity, and the things that haunt us. You've had four seasons, and they've all been different stories. First, what does palimpsest mean? And two, how did you come up with the idea for the series?
Palimpsest is a term from art history, and a palimpsest is a painting or a piece of writing that has been reused. So, you know, back when paper was at a premium, you would scrape off writing and then write over it, and sometimes you would reuse canvases and paintings that way. And but a palimpsest is where the underlying, the original piece isn't completely erased, and so traces of it show through in the new piece. So for us, palimpsest is about the past breaking through into the present, the things that have come before, the layers of things in the past not staying where they are. And it's a good flexible term that can be applicable to any kind of story we want to write. All of our stories are set in the same house, which kind of moves through time and space. So that's the thing that ties us together. And it came about because I'm a playwright, and I had a play produced here in Asheville in 2017. Haley Henninger was in that play. And during the production, we kind of connected and became friends. And at the time, both of us were listening to the podcast Alice Isn't Dead, which is a great single voiced horror podcast, horror audio drama. And it just felt like like a fun challenge to try. Like that Alice Isn't Dead has one writer and one performer. And both of us sort of independently were like listening to it and thinking that would be fun to try. And so when we found out that we were both thinking that, we decided to try it. And the first season was a really standard ghost story, or not standard, but like a traditional haunted house story, and did relatively well. But mainly it was, you know, my mom listened. And then when we finished the season, we got a couple of really good national reviews. And then when season two launched, we had an audience, and it's sort of grown from there. And it's been really terribly fun to have like people making fan art and sending us emails and stuff. So it's been a good time. We're in pre-production for season five now.
Oh, awesome. When does season five come out?
That's a great question. We don't know yet. Probably, I mean, I'm thinking October is a good guess, but it really depends on where I'm about 3/4 of the way done with the writing of it. You know, once we finish writing, we'll start recording.
Cool. Using the same house as a backdrop for all of the stories reminds me of there's a play called The Hallway Trilogies by Adam Rapp. And it's a three-part play, not three acts, but three separate plays. Sure. And it takes place in the same hallway over the course of 100 years.
Oh, wow. That sounds really cool. I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really good play. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't plan it to be that way to begin with. We were just doing the one story. And then when we started the second season, which is set in the 19th century and is a queer fairy story, I just decided to put it in the same house. And that means that we have a recognizable brand, but I can set it in any time period in any place that I want to. Like season 3 set in London during the Blitz, and it means I can just play and write what I want, and we could still call it Palimpsest.
What kind of plays have you written that have been horror themed?
I've written a zombie apocalypse play, which was kind of fun, but the two that I'm proudest of, one is called Grave Lullaby, which is about dead babies. And it's a haunted house story, and which is based on a real thing that happened to me. My wife and I moved into a house when I was in grad school, and we were clearing the overgrown garden and found a gravestone, like a solid gravestone of a baby. Like it had, I forget her name, but it had the name is Gertrude something. And she had lived like 3 weeks in 1895, and it was unconnected to anything. It was just lying face down in the weeds. And we had a 1-year-old at the time. And I was like, this is the thing that's ever happened to me. I don't like it. And it ended up being a prank. The guy that owned the house before us had stolen it from a graveyard or somewhere, and just as a prank, not on us, but just like he had it and he just forgot it and he left it in the yard and scared us. But so I wrote the play Grave Lullaby around that event. And then Bloodbath, which is a slasher, kind of a meta slasher. Bloodbath is about a woman who starred in a bunch of slasher films in the 80s and is trying to make a comeback in the late 90s. But someone is stalking her. And that was fun because I got to make up like a whole slew of imaginary slasher films that she had been in and you know, make her a filmography. So
that's fun.
Yeah.
Does your wife like horror movies?
Not really. My wife has really vivid dreams based on visuals. So she likes to know the story and she wants me to tell her everything that's happened and the stuff I'm watching, but it is not good for her to watch it. So she can't see it. So sometimes we'll watch, you know, she'll just be faced away from the laptop or whatever and be asking me what's happening. She watches my stuff and she listens to the podcast.
So you're in Asheville, North Carolina?
Yeah, in Black Mountain, right outside of Asheville.
Oh, nice. I visited Asheville like a year and a half ago. Uh-huh. I did a ghost tour while I was there. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, apparently Asheville is on like a plethora of ley lines, which there's no scientific...
Right, right.
To ley lines,
I've heard that. Yeah. So who did your ghost tour? Was it in a hearse?
No, it was not that one. It was just walking. But we went by a house for the first stop that they said was like a woman once felt like she was having a heart attack after she looked into a window and saw a ghost and tried to take a photo of it. Super creepy. But Asheville's really cool.
It is cool. Yeah. Zelda Fitzgerald died here. She supposedly haunts. Several different places claim her ghost.
Oh, do you have any favorite horror plays that you've seen that you haven't written?
I haven't seen a lot of horror on stage. I wanted to see the right one in. I really wanted to see the one that's just closed on Broadway called The
Gray House.
Yeah, Gray House. Did you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And how was it?
It was creepy.
Yeah.
Not the best ghost play that I've ever seen, but it had its creepy moments, like loud sounds and whatnot.
Sure. So. Sure. I really like Tatiana Maslany, so I thought that was cool. I saw The Woman in Black in the West End in London, and I went in really cynical. Like I was like, I don't think they can scare me, right? I was all hip and like I do this for a living, and it was terrifying. Yeah. It was really scary. Yeah, so yeah. I really love that play.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. So you're a horror scholar. What was it like getting your PhD in Gothic horror, and why did you choose Gothic horror?
I chose Gothic horror because I love it. Because it was, once I realized they would let me do that, I thought it was fun. And so my PhD is in Victorian Gothic. So I worked with Jekyll and Hyde and Dracula and Picture of Dorian Gray and like Dickens later novels and things like that. So it was, I've talked about this in other interviews, the perception of like academic snobbery towards genre didn't really come into play because I was doing established works of literature. So it was sort of like sneaking under the radar, and it was fine. It was good. And, you know, I got to go to London a couple of times for research trips, and that was fun. And I wrote a book on the urban Gothic, an academic book from that. And then since then, in the 20 years since then in my career, I've been able to then parlay that into publishing academic articles on Let the Right One In, for instance, and things like that. And now I teach contemporary horror all the time. And so it's been fun. And they don't, at least the school I'm at Warren Wilson College in Swannanoa, North Carolina, and they're very supportive because students love it. I mean, my classes fill because they see horror and they're like, oh, I want to do that.
Yeah, I wish my college would have had a horror class.
So it's fun. I really enjoy it. And I think there's a lot to be learned from it. I mean, I think all art is political, and there's a lot of, you know, the things that we're anxious about as a culture, as a society, horror is the place where they get expressed. And I think we learn a lot about ourselves by learning what scares us.
Oh, yeah, that's really smart. I love that. My two favorite Gothic horror movies, I think, are The Others and The Woman in Black.
Yeah.
The movie version with Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I hadn't seen The Others in a long time. That's a good movie.
It's really good. Yeah. They're apparently coming out with a Criterion version of it next year for the anniversary.
Good to know. Yeah, cool. That's good to know.
So an article came out in 2020 that said that horror movie fans were handling lockdown better than non-horror movie fans. Why do you think that was?
I think because, like, when the pandemic happened, a lot of us were like, oh, I've read this book. I've seen this movie. I know how this goes down. You know, there's a lot of talk about how science fiction predicts, you know, whatever kind of technological advance we have. You can usually look back 30 years and find a science fiction writer who invented it on paper. And I think things like climate change, you know, I've been reading climate apocalypse novels for a long time, for long before it was like in the center of the public consciousness. And the pandemic does the same kind of thing. I think we just kind of knew how to, I don't know if I handled it better than other people, but I it didn't. Did you read Survivor Song, Paul Tremblay's Survivor Song?
No.
It's a pandemic novel. It's a zombie novel. And it came out like April when the pandemic hit in March. So clearly he was writing it for the year before that and had no idea a pandemic was coming, but it was exactly what was happening in real time. Like, it takes place in Boston and they were shutting down the borders and they were setting up, you know, refrigerated trucks for the morgues outside. And it was like he had seen into the future and was writing the stuff that was happening all around us. And so I think a lot of this bad stuff that we deal with is predictable. And horror writers' jobs is to imagine worst case scenarios. And a lot of those scenarios sometimes happen.
That's really interesting about Paul Tremblay's book. Is there like any like graphic like gore or animal stuff in that book?
A little bit.
A little bit, yeah. That's why I mostly stayed away from Paul Tremblay.
But yeah. I mean, I think the first indicator that something's going wrong is like a fox or something. Like, there's some animals that have been zombified at the beginning, but there's no, like, I mean, nobody, you know, shoots a dog or anything, but there's definitely some creepy animals.
Are there any horror movies that you won't watch or that you won't watch ever again?
Well, The Strangers. I don't particularly love torture porn. So unless it's really well done, again, if the character, like, I think Saw is a really great film. I don't particularly care for like Hostel or in those films. So I won't watch them simply because it's not my thing. And like, I'm not like, oh, it's so horrible, I can't handle it. But yeah. I just don't. I probably shouldn't admit this. I've never seen Cannibal Holocaust.
I haven't either.
And I'm a little, and I don't have an interest in it. Like, I know enough about it to know that I would probably just be like, that's what I'm afraid to watch. I don't think I would enjoy that.
Have you ever had any noteworthy experiences seeing a horror movie in theaters?
Yeah. Okay. 99, or I guess it was 99 when it came out. My wife and I hadn't been married long, and we lived in a log cabin outside of Asheville in the woods. And she was out of town, and I went to the midnight debut of the Blair Witch Project, which was one of the first sort of viral marketing things. You know, the internet was kind of new, and I was really fascinated with it. And it was still in that sort of, they were presenting it as if it's a true story kind of thing. And I went to see it, and it was it's a solid film. It didn't like scare me to death. I feel like it rambles a little bit in the middle, but I went to see it at midnight. It was over around 1:30. And then I drove alone out to the woods to the cabin that I lived in. And by the time I got home, it was the most effective horror movie I think I've ever seen. Like, I got home and I just like put on Iron Maiden and turned on all the lights and just sat on the couch, afraid to go to sleep. So that was fairly noteworthy.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I remember when I saw Blair Witch in theaters too. I followed all the internet viral marketing. Mm-hmm.
That's another genre I really love is found footage. I know it can be overdone, and sometimes there are plot problems. Mm-hmm. Why don't you turn off the camera? That plot problem. But when it's done well, I really like it. And so I like Blair Witch. I think there's better ones out there. But yeah, I dig a found footage.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
What has been your favorite horror movie that you've seen in 2023?
I'm trying to think what I've seen new in 2023. I will court controversy. I think Skinamarink.
Awesome.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
I did. I saw it in theaters when it was in theaters in New York for a weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was cool to see it with a group of people because we were just like heightened tension the entire time, completely silent. Like we were waiting for something to happen.
Right.
So it was a cool experience, but I love hearing that people loved it.
Yeah, I think it's not a perfect film. And it's like I agree with people that are like, it's about 20 minutes too long, because it's probably about 20 minutes too long. but the scene in the look under the bed scene.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's a perfect piece of tension right there. That was good. It's not horror, but I got to see an advanced screening the week before it came out of Beau Is Afraid. And loved it. Like I am in that percentage of people that I think it might be his best film.
Oh, nice. I mean, some people think it's horror. I didn't think it was horror, and I thought it was very, very long. But
yeah,
some people do think it's horror.
It depends on what scares you, I guess. Because if it was a 3-hour anxiety attack.
Yeah,
like there was so much anxiety, and so I guess if that's horror for you, then that's horror. But I thought it was. I just loved it.
Yeah. Speaking of being scaredy cat, as a horror fan, I also deal with anxiety. And do you know what makes anxiety worse? Coffee. So I'm always looking for energy alternatives to coffee. So that's why I'm stoked to be partnering with the company Magic Mind on this week's episode. Like I said, coffee has been known to increase anxiety. So when the folks at Magic Mind reached out and asked to partner with us, I said absolutely. I often have trouble focusing all day long and my energy dips after the initial caffeine spike in the morning, and Magic Mind is here to help with that. After taking Magic Mind daily for about 2 weeks, I noticed that my memory was better after, and I was able to better focus. And the week after, I went back to doing coffee in the morning, and it definitely makes you feel jittery, so I definitely prefer the feeling that Magic Mind gives you. I'm such a super fan of brands that incorporate medicinal herbs and mushrooms in their products, and Magic Mind incorporates ingredients like ashwagandha, which reduces stress and anxiety, matcha, which is basically extended release caffeine, and cordyceps and lion's mane mushrooms. And don't worry, these aren't cordyceps like from Last of Us, but a powerful one nonetheless. It's an adaptogen that reduces inflammation, strengthens your immune system, and supports high energy levels and physical endurance. If you're ready to ditch that fourth cup of coffee and your afternoon crash, I totally recommend that you try this. You can get it at magicmind.com/Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N. And with the code Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N 2020, you can also get up to 56% off on your first subscription or 20% off your one-time purchase. That's Allison 20, Allison 20 for 56% off. They also have a 100% money back guarantee, no questions asked, so there's really no risk to try it. So it's magicmind.com/Allison with the code Allison20 for up to 56% off your subscription. Thank you so much to Magic Mind, and let me know if you try it and how much you love it. What horror movie are you most looking forward to seeing in the rest of the year?
What's it called? The one that has just come out with the hand.
Talk to Me.
Talk to Me. I'm really looking forward to that, actually. And I don't know if it'll live up to the hype or not.
I can't wait to hear what you think of it. So.
Yeah. So have you seen it yet?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I won't tell you one way or the other. Yeah. I don't want to influence you.
We'll talk after we see it. Yeah. I saw, a great film I saw. I forgot this. It's on Hulu right now. It's called The Night, and it's by an Iranian American filmmaker. It's in Farsi, so it's subtitled. And it's a really solid film. I really liked
Oh,
it.
okay. Cool.
Yeah.
I'll have to check it
And
out.
it's worth checking out. Yep.
Are there any horror movies that you love that people generally don't like?
I don't know. I love such a wide variety of things. So there's some cheesy things that I love that people might not think are should be high on my list. But as far as ones that are like kind of reviled, I don't know. I'm not going to be able to answer that one very well because
Okay.
I'm not sure. Yeah. If it comes to me, I'll say. I mean, I like bad slashers. Like I said, I watched all those slashers. And so there are some slashers that I have like great affection for that I don't know that other people would say, oh, that's a great movie. But I appreciate a well done bad slasher.
Nice. You should
So,
meet my friend
yeah.
Joe. He loves all of those terrible slasher movies that are just super
Yeah,
cheesy.
there are some really cheesy ones out there. Yeah.
If you could remake one horror movie, which one would it be?
They're remaking all of them now, so there's not many left. That's a great question. The ones that I love the most have been remade and usually have been remade worse. Black Christmas and they did the English version of Let the Right One In, which was which was almost shot for shot the same film. Like the shots were composed the same way. I didn't understand what that remake was about at all, except that Americans don't like subtitles. So yeah, I'm not sure. There's a one of my favorite vampire films is a film by Neil Jordan called Byzantium with Saoirse Ronan from 2012 or something like that. It's a really, really good film. I don't know if I would remake that, but that's a film that I think more people ought to know because I
Awesome.
think it's a really, really one of my top three probably vampire films of all time.
Awesome. I'll keep that in mind. I'll put that on
Yeah.
my list.
Yeah. Gemma Atherton's also in it. I was just remembering the cast.
So my final question is, if you had to spend quarantine with one horror villain, who would it be?
Oh, that's fun.
I mean, they wouldn't kill you, but they
They
might just
wouldn't.
torture you.
Right. Well,
So.
I don't want to be tortured with the villain. I can think of some heroes or protagonists I would want to spend with. It would probably be a werewolf. So it would probably be either Ginger from Ginger Snaps, or I don't think I would like David from American Werewolf in London. I love American Werewolf in London, but I don't think I'd want to spend a year in a house with that guy. So maybe. Oh no, it would be Ellie from Let the Right One In, hands down. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me. Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you and your writing online?
Yep, absolutely. You can find me just in general at jamesonreidenauerwriter.com. And you can find my show at thepalimpsestpodcast.com. Or you can go search for Palimpsest on Spotify or iTunes or any podcatcher in the world, and you'll find
Awesome. Wait, I will leave links to all those in the show notes. Thank
Okay.
you again.
Thank you. It's good to talk to you.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There? I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jameson Ridenour, and thanks again to Jameson for coming on. I'll leave links to where you can listen to Palimpsest in the show notes. And thanks again to Magic Hour for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check them out and get a 56% discount with the code and the link in my show notes. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Who's There PC. Don't forget to check out our Patreon if you want to stay connected for just $3 a month. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest in 2024, shoot us an email at whostherepc@gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and never ask who's there.